1969 World Series champion Art Chamsky joins the Danielle McCartan Show. Art, thanks for making some time for us today. Congrats on the new book.
Thanks. It's great to be with you.
So I want to start at the kind of the beginning. The concept for your newest book, Met Stories, I Only Tell My Friends, came from a President Eisenhower book. And sitting to write it down, like, what was your goal? What did you want people to come away with after reading?
Well, you know, Danielle, this is my third book, and so many books have been written about that 69 team. I really believe more books have been written about that team than any other sports team in history. And for me to write another book, I just had to come up with an idea. And somebody told me about this book that former President Eisenhower wrote way back in the 50s. It was called At Ease, Stories I Tell My Friends. And, you know, I glanced through it and I realized that, you know, there were things that I could talk about that hadn't been really mentioned before. I could maybe even talk more about things that had been written before. And so it was just coming up with some ideas, just trying to lay some groundwork. And really, this is not a book. I think people's first reaction when they see the name of it, it's going to be some inside trashy stuff about my playing career and guys I play with. But it's not that. It's really about my experiences with my teammates on and off the field, and really about the things I think people could smile about and laugh about. And, you know, maybe some of them were a little bit not in line with all the things you're supposed to be doing as a baseball player, but the reality was it was what we did. And so that was the basis for it.
You know what? I really like the way that you kind of put it together. It's like a series of vignettes, and they're like, you know, the chapter title, and then like there's a couple vignettes that go along with that chapter title. Like stylistically, because it's your third book, stylistically, did that just kind of come together naturally, or was that the plan from the beginning?
You know, when you start to come up with an idea, really, you don't really have a set thing. It's going to change from day to day. I mean, I come up with ideas now, or things that maybe I should have put in the book, or maybe I shouldn't have said this or shouldn't have said that. I think there's no set way. It's just how you feel at the time. And again, my purpose is really to make people smile and reflect on that particular season and that year. And you know, what's true about the reality of it is that when I meet people today, so many people want to talk about that year, that team. Kids or young people who weren't even born know about it from their parents and their grandparents. And I do a lot of personal appearances and speaking engagements. And when I run across people who were you know, older and were around back in the late 60s, it's kind of their youth comes back. It really comes back where people want to talk about being there when they were young and they came to the ballpark, and that makes me feel happy. And you know, it makes my youth come out too. But you know, it makes me feel younger. So I'm really happy about that. But you know, the reality of it is, I feel very special to have been part of that 69 Met team. I tell people on this, and they could or not agree with me, but the reality of it is, I think there's two teams in the history of the game that resonate with fans years after they won. One of them is the 27 Yankees, of course, with Babe Ruth and Lou Gehrig and all that, those great cast of characters. And that'll be 100 years in 2 years from now. But in the 69 Mets, I mean, we're now 56 years later and people still talk about that team. And the reality of it is, I played 13 years and nobody talks about the other 12. It's really about 1969. And really, the funny part of it is that I run into people and everybody's got a story. Everybody was at a game. They were there for the final game on October 16th, way back in 1969. And I tell myself, you know, about 100,000 people have told me they were there. And I know the ballpark held about 53,000. So either they were or they weren't, but it doesn't make any difference to me. If they think they were there, that's fine with me.
1969 World Series champion Art Chamsky joins us. You know, there were three of the anecdotes. Like you said, we'll start with the funny one. You were in Chicago. There was a lady taunting you from the outfield. Turned around. Not what you thought she'd look like, huh?
No, I heard a screechy voice this whole game, batting practice. Ah, the Mets suck. You this, you that. You know, and I'm pretty tolerant of a lot of things. And of course, we had a big rivalry with the Cubs back then. And they're right on top of you, the bleacher bums out there in right field. And so, you know, I tolerated it. And then I made the last out of a top of the inning there in Chicago at Wrigley Field. And I ran out to the outfield. And I just heard this voice again. She just didn't let up. You this, you that. And I mean, it wasn't the nicest words either. And I said, oh, finally, I'm going to get back and I'm going to do something. I don't know what. I'm just going to say something. Or I turn around and here's this beautiful girl putting suntan oil sunbathing out there, and she had the voice that nobody would like, but all of a sudden it was a different world that I thought was going on right there. It was a funny time.
I laughed out loud when I was reading that. There's another more serious note there too, because you talked about the sort of troubling relationship you had with your dad, how you saw him, you invited him into the clubhouse celebration. That made me really happy to read. So from that point on, did it improve the relationship with your father?
Yeah, my dad was, listen, I dedicated the book to him. He was the first person that soft tossed with me when I was a kid, and gave me a glove and a bat and a ball, and we took me to the ballparks. We were big Cardinal fans. I grew up in St. Louis, and he was one of these guys. When we went into the ballpark, he said, "All right, you got to go to the bathroom now, or you want something to eat now, get it now. But once the game starts, you're not getting up from that seat." He was there all the time, and was one of these guys too. When I played amateur baseball, he would say, "Oh, great, you had a pretty good game. You got a couple hits, but what did you do the other two times at bat?" And so one of these, it was that kind of relationship. But when we won the World Series and they were there, my folks were there, I thought it would be a nice gesture to bring him. It was so crazy that day anyway when we won. And I brought him into the locker room, and he had known a lot of the players, and he got caught up in this the success that we had. And I was really happy that I was able to do that. And then when I was writing this book, I said, let me dedicate it to him, because he really was the one that kind of got me started in the game.
Yeah, I love that. And then there's another scene where you describe towards the end of the book, a bunch of you guys getting together at the Seaver Vineyards. Very touching, like how he wasn't feeling great, how it ended up working out, spending the day together. And then as that day is ending, what was it like knowing that's probably the last time you guys were going to be all together?
Well, that was a tough trip. That was really big part of the last book, after the miracle that I wrote, the trip out to see him. He had just acknowledged that he was having some problems and was in early stages of Alzheimer's, and then or dementia. And then we decided to make the trip, because when we were doing these interviews, I didn't want to do an interview with him over the phone. I wanted to do it in person, and he was out in California. We were in New York, and we just decided to take a trip out there. But the problem was, he wasn't feeling good, and we could go all the way out there and not be able to sit down and talk with him. And so we rolled the dice, and it took Jerry Kuzman and Bud Harrelson and Ron Swoboda. We kind of put it together, and the problem was, they came from, other than Buddy, they came from different areas, and we're just trying to put it together. And it turned out we were lucky to spend some time with him, and it was really an unbelievable day we spent. And then when we left, I had the feeling it was bittersweet. I didn't know if we'd ever see, we're all older. We don't know who we're going to see in the future. And as it turned out, we didn't see him anymore. It was a kind of a bittersweet moment. But the reality of it was, we spent 8 or 9 hours with him, and all reminiscing about how important that winning that championship was for all of us in our lives. And that became very, very important, and vivid images of our time out there. And it was a great teammate. All the guys were great teammates. We lost five guys last year from that 69 team, and we've lost too many guys. But the reality of it is, we still have a nucleus of players and teammates around. And for me, it's always going to be special. But being part of that team is still one of the greatest things in my life. And I'm able to talk to wonderful people like yourself, and sportscasters, sports writers who maybe weren't around when we played, but know about that team from reading about it and hearing about it. And it was so special. And that year in 69 was an unbelievable year in sports in New York. That's when the Jets won, we won, and then the Knicks won in May of 70. But what's interesting about those three teams, Danielle, is that all of us won for the first time. Nobody had ever won before. And that was the thing. And of course, you put it in the context of what was going on in the country, the war with Vietnam, and all the problems that were going on in New York City. But that was a great time for all of us. And as witnessed by now, I'm still talking to great people like yourself, what, 56 years later.
Art Chamsky, author of Mets Stories, I Only Tell My Friends, is with us right now. I don't know if you know, I coach myself, and it's hard to get everybody in all the time. And I love that you wrote about that Gil Hodges, that he did do that at the end of the book. A little bit about, a little anecdote, a little story about every guy on your 25-man roster. Why was it important for you to do that?
Because everybody on that team contributed to the success of the team. There's so many stories you can tell, and you try to get everybody's name in it. But I wanted everybody to know my feelings about my teammates and friends, and we're The guys are still around. We're still all friends, and everybody touched my life. Everybody made my life better and where I'm at today because of all those guys. And so I just wanted to do these little anecdotes and little thoughts about everybody. And like I said, we've lost too many guys from that team, but everybody, I think the secret or the legacy of that team is that when you talk about it, yes, you're going to mention Seaver, you're going to mention Jerry Kuzman and Cleon Jones and Tommy Agee, but everybody on that team contributed to success of the team. And I think that's the true legacy of when people talk about it. They talk about Al Weiss and they talk about Don Clendenin and Eddie Crampo and Ed Charles and Wayne Garrett and of course Buddy Harrelson. But I can go on the whole list. There's so many guys. And I think that was the beauty of Gil Hodges and the way he managed and he was able to get everybody involved. And I think that is really the true legacy of the team.
And you even wrote that in the championship series, you guys didn't care who won MVP, could have given all of us get together or whatever. But nowadays, with contract bonuses for awards like that, do you think that mentality still exists in today's game?
Yeah, back then, I had a great playoff series against Atlanta. I could have been the MVP. They just didn't have it back then. I had 7 hits and 13 at bats. But other guys could have wanted two on the team. As you know, and you're a lot younger than me. The game has changed over the last 20, 30 years. It's not the game that I grew up with in St. Louis and played as an amateur and of course in the minor leagues. But it's still a great game. It's still baseball. It's still the wonderful sport that teaches you humility. It teaches you how to deal with failure and bat 10 times and get 3 hits. You're a star. Hitting 300, but you failed 7 times, and so you have to deal with those failures. But the game is different today than when I played, but it's still a wonderful sport to watch. And I wish all the of course, the Mets success, and hopefully it's a great year for New York sports.
I hope so. I mean, with the Knicks and all too, and hopefully my Jets will get it together one day.
My team too.
You
We're
wrote,
gluttons for punishment.
we're full of character art. That's what we are. You wrote about how Shea is always a special part of your life. You love Shea. They've got the Seaver statue outside of Citi Field. You've been back. I know you have. But embodying that concept of team, the 1969 Mets, do you wish there's more of, I don't know, a representation of you guys at Citi Field?
It's been 50 something years. Marketing today is really about what's going on now in recent history. That would be great. The reality of it is, I've got a great relationship with the Mets, and I wish them well. And the Seaver statue was really wonderful. When they tore down Shea Stadium, part of my youth was taken from me. That's the way I felt. I said that at a press conference when Eddie Crapo passed away. They had me out there talking about Eddie, and I said, "Well, when Eddie passed away, another part of my youth was taken away." But the reality of it is, I do some things for the Mets, and I appreciate what they do. And for me, will always be a big part of the Met history. Listen, they've only won 2 times in all those years, and certainly the '86 team was a fantastic team, a truly come from behind team. But they were expected to win, whereas the '69 Mets were not expected to win, and that really surprised everybody. So the answer is whatever I can do. If they want me to do some stuff out there, fine. But I really generate whatever I do on my own, and I'm able to again talk to wonderful people like yourself, and maybe keep writing books. Who knows?
Well, it's my job then to amplify that message. So, Steve Cohen, if you're listening, let's make something special for these 69 Mets out there at Citi Field. One of the key members of the 1969 Mets, Art Chamsky, is with us now. You wrote about you said you wonder how many people playing now even know the name of Marvin Miller. I'm sure you've seen it. Gerrit Cole signs as a free agent with the Yankees, thanks Marvin Miller in that first press conference. I didn't know who he was. I now know who he was because of Gerrit Cole. What did you think about that shout out there?
Yeah, I think that's great. Of course, Marvin changed the game, and was hated by certainly by the owners for a long period of time. But really, I was around when he joined the Players Association, and I remember him coming around and introducing himself. And there's this really small, frail man who'd come from the steel workers unions, and we kind of threw all our hats behind him, and really changed. He changed the game. It was so much further the other side than it is now. Players have a lot of power now. Back then, in the '60s, and when I came up, there wasn't a lot of power. You were really part of an organization and you were locked in no matter what happened, unless they wanted to let you go, to release you or trade you. But now it's a different world, and he really changed the game. I'll never forget a meeting he had in 1971 at the end of the season before the strike in 72, spring training. He came in and he said, "Listen, I know you guys are all worried, and there's a possibility we might have to go on a strike in spring training, and this is something that might affect some of you guys. But the reality of it is, just remember this: whatever you do today is going to affect the guys down the line. And look at what's happened now. All these years later, the guys are, free agency, arbitration, all these wonderful things that have happened to the players. And you know what's interesting, Daniel, is probably the guys who played before me in the 30s, 40s, 50s probably thought we were getting too much. And reality of it is, we weren't making anything, but they complained about us. But I don't complain about it. I wish these guys all well, because I wouldn't trade it for two reasons. First, the World Series ring that I have on my finger, which is so special to me. And the fact that I played in an era that I think had the greatest conglomerate of players in the history of the game in the 60s, with Mays, Aaron, Clemente, all these wonderful. I can go down the list of National League players and pitchers, and I was lucky to play with them. Came up with Cincinnati, and Frank Robinson was there, Pete Rose, Johnny Bench. So I know I played with and against all these great players, and I always feel like I was lucky enough to be in that era, because it was such a great group of players, and that I think the Hall of Fame has more players from the 60s and early 70s than any era in the history of the game.
It was Gil Hodges' idea to turn you into a first baseman. You said he tutored me myself or himself. What are your thoughts on guys that refuse to change positions today? We're seeing it play out in Boston right now.
I don't know if it's more the players or the agents. Agents really kind of dictate what's going on. And I think players back in my era, you were lucky to play. You felt like, listen, give me a glove. If it's at first base, great. If it's in the outfield, great. I was really kind of limited to a couple positions because I was left-handed. But I think it's a different world. The guys are a lot of money involved, a lot of negotiations. Some guys have contracts that if you play a certain amount of games at one position, a certain position, you're going to get bonuses and stuff. So if they move them around, that's a big factor. So it's, again, a different kind of world that we live in terms of baseball. And I think the agents have a lot of control over the players. And if a guy is not happy, he doesn't call anybody else except his agent. Let him, his agent, deal with the management. And we never had agents. We weren't even allowed to have agents in negotiations. And I talk about some of those things that I experienced in the book, because doing things on your own without an agent, like they have nowadays, was funny at times and sad at times.
Let's talk some extracurriculars. The Las Vegas residency you guys had going.
Well, when you say residency, we were out there for 17 days. So I guess 2 weeks on stage and making fools of ourselves can be considered a residency. Yeah. That was one of these experiences you can't even begin to talk about. They took seven of us out there, and we actually did make fools of ourselves. They had to put some professional singers behind the curtains back there, and we did two shows at night. One was the dinner show with tuxedos on, and the next one at 12 o'clock, and we were casual clothes. But the good thing about all that stuff is we were at Caesar's Palace, and they treated us like kings. But we got a chance to meet all these stars, and Elvis, and I mean, to go down the list, Tom Jones. What remember Tom Jones asking me if he could try on my ring? We didn't have the rings. He said, "When you get it, can I try on your rings? Do you send it to me?" I said, "Send it to you. There's no way I'm going to send it to you. Forget about it. I'll tell you about it when I get it." But just all these stars that we met, and it was just a wonderful 17 days of our lives. We were on top of the world. You couldn't ask for more things to happen to us. And all the shows that we did, and separate of that, and all the shows and over the winter that we did, it was. I have vivid memories of all those things, believe me.
I hope you knew this one was coming. Can you give me a line or two from one of your smash hits?
Oh, why we what to say? Well, we know we cut a record, an album, and I can tell you some of the songs that were on the album. That was separate of Las Vegas. We did a Buddha Records put out an album that might have sold maybe 10 copies, a 33 and a third, those big albums that they did a turntable for. That was we sang East Side, West Side, The Green, Green Grass of Shea, God Bless America. You don't have one of those copies, do you, by any chance?
I don't. I wish I did. It's got to be
Well, I don't
digital
even know if you have a
somewhere.
turntable anymore, but anybody has those things. But Well, we did a lot of different things and we had these cast of characters. There were Tug McGraw and Koosman, and all these guys were just was just wonderful times in our lives. And we should have won more. We had a great team, and next year was tougher because couldn't sneak up on anybody. And I think the other thing, just to take it one step further, I do think the Mets would have won more championships if Gil Hodges would have lived longer. He died at a very young age, and I think that was a big factor in them not winning more championships.
So as a player, when you were playing, there were rules against like I can never say this way, fraternization. Like you couldn't talk with the guys out on
Fraternizing. Yeah,
fraternizing.
fraternizing. Yeah.
But you figured out a way to do it when you were playing first base.
Yeah, well, first base was great. That was one of the reasons I love playing first base, because you got a chance to talk to the opposing players. And, back in those days, for me, they did it. Let me back it up. They had a fraternizing rule that you couldn't really converse with players. I mean, if you could walk close to the batting cage before the game and say hello, but they didn't want you face to face doing that. They used to have an umpire come out before the game, and they would write down if anybody was doing it, and they'd find you. I never got fined. I think it was $50 for fraternizing, with a fraternizing rule. But first base, you got a chance to say hello to all these great stars. And when Mays would get down on first, or Clemente, or Aaron, just to say hello to them for me was a big thrill. Because if you're out there in the outfield, you might go a whole game and never touch the ball, and so you got so much other stuff to think about, like you're hitting and you're fielding. But first base, you're in the play every game. You're just ready for action. But the best part of that was two things. It was close to the dugout, so you didn't have far to run after the inning was over. And the second thing is, you got a chance to say hello to the wonderful, great players that are there. I remember Henry Aaron came down to first base one day, and Hodges came out to talk to the pitcher. So I had about a minute to talk to him. And I said, "Hank," I said, "how does it feel to know you're going to get two or three hits every day?" Because I was watching him, and looked to me like he was hitting two or getting two hit every game. And he said to me, "Oh, no, I'm not going to get two or three every game, but if I don't get them today, I might get them tomorrow." So I just made me think that he never worried about anything other than just going up to hit. Well, we all had to worry. If we took an error for 0 for 4, we might not be in there. And I said to him, "I really like your swing." And he said to me, "You know what? I like your swing too." And I said, "Oh my God, I'm never going to forget this moment with talking to Henry Aaron." Because I don't know if he just said it to be saying it, but he made me feel really good.
Yeah, that's cool. Art Shamsky, author of Mets Stories, I Only Tell My Friends, is with us right now. I have to ask, if one of the original host on the WFAN middays you were, I mean, how does sports media change from when you were on to even now?
I remember that way back, and that was 1986. They asked me to do it. I was owned a restaurant back then, and with Ron Darling. Ronnie and I were partners, and two other guys. And the problem we had was, first of all, nobody believed it was ever going to be a success. It was this new concept of talk sports radio, 24 hours, and so. But I did it out of the restaurant, and I enjoyed it. But it was, and I was running the restaurant at the time, and it was so noisy at lunchtime that I just couldn't continue to do it. And so I only did it for a short period of time, a few months. But it was great experience, and they've gone on to, as you know, on a personal level, it's going on to be just an incredible sports phenomenon, and it's really a great avenue for people who want to just talk sports and want to know about things. And I remember just doing it and enjoying it. And I wasn't really an established broadcaster; it was a new experience for me. But I had ended up doing the Mets games for 3 years, and I worked at ESPN for a little bit. Then I worked at Channel 5 for a little bit. So it was a great stepping stone for me, and I really enjoyed it. And I'm really happy for you and everybody over there that's gone on to be such a great way for people to enjoy sports.
Well, thank you. I had a question. You brought up how you talked to Ron Darling the night before Game 7 of that World Series. You didn't say what it was. What did you talk about?
I just told him, "Relax, enjoy it." The thing about it is, I didn't have any experience in a seventh game of a World Series, but I had been through the World Series, and I had the distinction of making the last out of the first game, which turned out to be the only game we lost in the World Series. But I knew Ronnie. I liked him. We were friends. I just wanted him to relax. He was pitching the next day, and I said, "Look, just enjoy the moment. You got enough talent that you don't have to do anything except go out and pitch the way you know you can pitch." And it was really more of a thing to make him relax and understand that this moment is historic in many ways. And so it turned out that they were such an exciting team, a come from behind team, and had a great World Series. And again, the difference between them and '69 is that they were very good in '85, and could have won and lost in the playoffs. And then, '86 team was just come from behind, as we all know. But the '69 team, of course, was my experience with him, telling him was that anything can happen. Just enjoy the moment.
So we're national right now. We're being broadcast across the entire country. What is your biggest pitch to everybody else, not in our New York, New Jersey area? Someone that's not a Met fan, why should they go out and pick up a copy of your new book?
I think it just is kind of an enjoyable read. There's no pressure on anybody here. It's not derogatory in any ways. It really talks about some of my experiences, and I think people, no matter who their favorite team, will get a kick out of some of these stories and maybe relate to some of the players that I play with. But that's really it. And the names are some of the players there. From Tug McGraw to Nolan Ryan to Tom Seaver to all the guys I play with there. Jerry Kuzan, these cast of characters that, every team has characters, but you remember these wild moments that you had, these fun things, some not so funny at the time, but looking back and reflecting on it, they were all part of this process of growing up and being part of this group of players that you lost games with and you won games with. And that was the beauty of being on that '69 team, because the year before we finished ninth, a half game out of last place. And so we saw a lot of losing, and then go ahead and win it the next year. It really gave a real perspective of how important that was and being part of that team.
Sure. Well, you ended up where you were supposed to be. It worked out. And that's your third book. So if you're listening right now, you can go to wherever your books are sold, an actual brick and mortar store, Amazon, Barnes and Noble, wherever, and pick up your copy of Art Shamsky's Mets Stories I Only Tell My Friends. And I enjoyed it from cover to cover. I don't say that about all of them, but I actually really liked it. And more so, I'm more of a Yankee fan, but I loved it, Art. It was really good. And
Thanks, Daniel.
really appreciate it. Thanks for joining us today. Appreciate your
My
time.
pleasure. See you soon. Thanks.